All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Common Sense up here on the beautiful shores of Lake Wissota for this Thursday, April 13th. Just gorgeous out there. Going to be another hot day. Can't believe we're saying it's going to be a hot day, but it is. Then a cool down, but do enjoy this the best way that you can. Coming up this morning, maybe you're the problem is our title. Scott Walker is blaming the recent Republican losses of young voters on quote-unquote indoctrination. Congressman Mike Gallagher says the solution is to, quote, tighten election procedures. Is there any chance they're asking if maybe their extremism is the problem? We will talk to Joe Zepecki about GOP reaction to last week's results and to Senator Tammy Baldwin's announcement that she's running for a third term next year. Then, in our hometown health segment, pediatric mental health, Dr. Kristen Lyerly will be joined by the CEO of Catalpa Health about the resources the legislature can provide and the measures that need to be taken up as soon as possible for what is a very real mental health crisis in America, especially for young people. Governor Tony Evers has said that every kid in Wisconsin should have access to school-based mental health services through his Get Kids Ahead initiative, and we'll talk more about that a little later in the program. Also, Luke Mathers will join us before all is said and done, but first, Aaron Zomers joins us first from down in Madison, where I assume it is an equally gorgeous morning there, too, yes?
Oh, yes. Nice and toasty. Well, not toasty yet, but...
It will be.
Certainly not requiring a sweatshirt.
No, nothing like that. In fact, for those folks, if you're watching the video feed on Facebook here, I have an unusually bright shirt on, a coral to the point of almost orange. It's really not clashing well with the kind of yellow and brown wall behind me here, but it's not a TV show. So you're just going to have to put up with what you get here. If you can stand my shirt, if you can stand Weezer. Well, you had Weezer on the other day. What's today's TV
yesterday.
Shirt?
Today is Lawrence University.
Lawrence
t-shirt.
University. There we go. Home of the Fighting
Vikings.
Larrys? Vikings?
Yeah.
Vikings. Okay.
An unfortunate name for a Wisconsin school.
Yeah. Hey, I have a special personal announcement to make from the Kreitlow Kitchen. I know you didn't get a bunch of leftovers there, but I'm happy to say the last of the Easter ham is finally gone. I have had ham and eggs every morning for breakfast. I have had a ham and cheese sandwich for lunch. I guess maybe I should have sent some down to you because, like you said, you didn't get to an Easter dinner, right?
I did not. No.
Okay. Well, see, now I feel bad. I should have shared it, but I took it upon myself. I took one for the team. I took another for the team, and I took another ham sandwich for the team, and it is finally gone out there. The other thing I've noticed going around besides leftovers, you've got people down there catching head colds about this time. We talked to Scott Ross the other day. He's down in Madison. He said he was fighting a head cold. My wife and I each fighting one. We've heard from other people that are too. Apparently, we're a bit more allergic to spring than we want to believe.
Perhaps. Yeah, I haven't heard a lot of that down here, but I also don't see that many people on the average day. So,
yeah, it's true. We are kind of locked up this way, aren't we? So, all right. Well, a reminder, if you want to tell us about your maladies, you can call us at 715-388-7155 or 844-967-2789. And you can send us an email, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And you can always learn more about this show and all the shows by going to civicmedia.us/shows or just go to civicmedia.us and you will find it there. Not a lot to say about sports here. You know, the Bucks are still waiting to find out who they will play in the first round of the playoffs, and I believe that answer will come up tomorrow. They'll find out who finally won in the little mini tournament for the NBA playoffs. The Brewers, meanwhile, lost a series for the first time, losing 2 out of 3 games in Arizona to the Diamondbacks. So they lost yesterday afternoon, 7-3. They just did not have their A game. As we mentioned, Brandon Woodford had been put on the injured list. They brought up Jansen Junk, who gave up 5 runs, 4 of them earned over just 4 2/3 innings. It was the first start for the 27-year-old. He surrendered 8 hits. He struck out two and he walked two. And then the Brewers defense committed three errors on their own. Now, William Contreras did have three hits for the Brewers, including a double. Christian Yelich had two RBIs after a very slow start. He's getting into gear, but it wasn't nearly enough. The Diamondbacks simply had the better bats. And so the Brewers then took off for the West Coast and are in San Diego. They have a four-game series there, 8:40 tonight, 8:40 tomorrow night, and then a couple of afternoon games that start again. Let's see if I can put my readers in and find out what this is. About 3 o'clock Central Time will be when the Saturday and Sunday games are taking place for the Brewers, who still have a very decent record. And like I said, won every series up until this point. So not a bad start to the season. When we take a look at headlines coming up throughout the show here, scattered about, we're going to be talking a couple of different times about figures that the Washington Post first compiled on college voting around Wisconsin last week. It was off the charts. We're going to talk to Joe Zepecki about it first, and then whatever material we don't cover in our interview at 6:30, I'll tackle that right afterwards, because it is just so impressive. But then we have other states like Tennessee, where the legislators that had been expelled have now returned. You have an entire election staff in a county in Virginia quitting after right-wingers accused them without basis of treason. And Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders in Arkansas wants you to praise her on an application before you can get any money. That and so much more coming up on Thursday, here on Up North News Radio. We'll be right back.
How do you do, fellow kids?
But I know sometimes I must get out.
As mentioned, we're going to talk to Joe Zepecki coming up a bit about youth voting and how it came about on the college campuses around Wisconsin. I'm going to give you just a quick flavor of the change here at UW Green Bay. In the voting ward that includes the Phoenix Room, in November, 73% of the vote went to Tony Evers. Last week, it was 85% of the vote went to Janet Protasiewicz. So there's a lot to be looking at there. So the kids are voting. The kids of all ages are embracing things that their parents and grandparents seem to still be struggling with after all these many years. The most recent example seems to come out of Waukesha, where the school district there is, it's had issues. For example, it was in August of 2021 that the Waukesha School District dropped participation in the federal school lunch program because, as part of pandemic relief, all the kids were getting school lunches for free. And a board member, unironically named Karen, said their free lunches make it easy for families to, quote, become spoiled. And another school official feared that there would be a slow addiction to the service, and that, the issue was less about, feeding kids, but more about federal mandates, to which I would agree. A federal mandate that maybe it's a good thing to feed our kids. But I digress, because that was then. Maybe things have gotten better. They have not. And look, Waukesha, again, getting things together. The city of Waukesha went for Janet Protasiewicz in last week's election. What was it? 50.1%. But that's, you take that progress where you can get it. But we have now learned through the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, with an article by Drake Bentley and Alec Johnson, that Marissa Temple, the Waukesha teacher who said that the school district's administration was going to ban students from performing the song Rainbow Land by Miley Cyrus and Dolly Parton, that teacher confirmed to the Journal Sentinel she's been placed on administrative leave. The song was deemed controversial, without an explanation as to why. Why first graders couldn't sing a song about, you know, a land of harmony called Rainbow Land. Temple is a first grade dual language teacher at Higher Elementary and deferred any further comment to the Alliance for Education in Waukesha. That's a group of parents who said they want the superintendent there to be investigated for discrimination of LGBTQ students and staff and accused him of repeated discriminatory actions. The group put out a statement saying, Waukesha is a national laughingstock, and the blame for that falls squarely to the feet of the district's leadership, not those who have the courage to hold them accountable like Ms. Temple. This superintendent and board began the march toward marginalization last year, and it has only served to stoke fear and sow distrust in the Waukesha community, which has yielded a pattern of bullying against anyone who calls out the district's bias and harassment. What's happening here in this case and in, you know, places around the country is that the most mega of the fringe right has been feeling their oats for several years now, ever since somebody's ride down the golden escalator, you know, riding that escalator down into levels I did not think America could really sink to. But it has, and we keep seeing this in example after example, and this latest one comes from Buckingham, Virginia, where the entire election staff of a county has quit because, again, they're being accused of things by right-wingers without any basis because they don't like the direction of the country. They don't like the direction of, you know, the elections. And so when the Republicans assumed control of the Buckingham County Electoral Board in Virginia, they started making these baseless voter fraud claims, according to NBC News. There were people saying that they had heard rumors and that they were basically passing them on as fact. And so now all four members have quit, leaving the county without a functioning registrar's office, meaning there's no way to register to vote or to certify candidate paperwork, at least temporarily until a state elections worker was brought onto the scene, but now has to rebuild a completely barren department. And that's because, again, election denialism has led people to continue to harass civil servants, not just in Virginia, but in Wisconsin and elsewhere. And it's driving good people out of office, not partisan people, just good people trying to do their job. And yet in the case of this Buckingham County, Virginia, you had Republicans on the board who were making claims, and, you know, they wanted audits. How did one person put it? Oh, one of the board members said, I am putting you on notice for treason. This is what we have here. Putting you on notice, which is, again, not a thing. It's not an actual disciplinary action. It's basically saying, I'm accusing you of treason because they did not like the way the vote total was coming in from absentee ballots that were coming into the registrar's office. And basically, these folks in the office said, yeah, at some point they said, to heck with this. They're doing their job. They're processing things properly. And yet what they're getting for their trouble is that people are getting elected to these local boards and feeling like they can accuse people of treason without any respect whatsoever for what these people do and without any evidence whatsoever. And yet this is what we're facing. Again, let's turn to Tennessee, where the two legislators who were expelled last week have now been returned to office by their respective local boards. There will still have to be a special election, but they're back in the seats that they had and had a simple message for the Tennessee Republicans who tried to kick them out. How's about we start addressing the actual problem that led to all this, and that was gun violence. It was the latest crisis was precipitated by the Covenant school shooting in Nashville. But instead of addressing the gun problem, and again, it is a gun problem, instead of addressing the gun problem and acknowledging their failure to address the gun problem, they decided it was easier to embrace attacking democracy. Now, I'm old enough to remember a time when you would uphold democracy at all costs, win or lose, that democracy was the glue holding our country together. You would not only uphold democracy at all costs, you would uphold kids' lives at all costs. You would do whatever you possibly could to keep kids safe. And these are folks who instead ignore the fear in our children of being slaughtered in their classroom and find it easier to attack democracy and kick people out of office, people that the voters put there, because you don't want to address something as basic as keeping kids safe. Well, all of this has certainly brought attention to those Tennessee legislators, and in what many will tell you is a nod to the demands of demonstrators at the Capitol, Tennessee's Republican governor on Tuesday signed an executive order strengthening background checks for gun purchases, and he called on the legislature to pass a red flag law that would temporarily remove guns from people who are deemed dangerous. This is literally the least you can do. When you say to people, look, the least you can do is pass a red flag, you know, and red flag law and do better background checks. I mean, will that solve everything? Of course not. But is it a positive step? Oh, of course it is. Of course it is. And I think when we look at the many reasons that Tim Michaels lost the race for governor last year, you certainly, anybody who listened to this show, know the issue that I jumped on, which frankly didn't get nearly, I thought, the attention that it should. But when he mentioned in the first debate that he was opposed to red flag laws because he was saying, well, women will basically just make stuff up so that their husband's hunting rifles are confiscated. I mean, again, just diminishing the actual threat to women and others who are abused in domestic partner violence. Forgive the sip of coffee there. But a red flag law has overwhelming support in poll after poll in Wisconsin. Like so many other things that Republicans, and I will say minority Republicans, because they have rarely gotten a majority of votes in Wisconsin, and yet they control a supermajority in the legislature, thanks gerrymandering, won't do the most basic things and instead would rather either kick legislators out or in Waukesha decide to attack a Dolly Parton song as too controversial, or in Virginia accuse people of treason. Now, in all cases, I guess they haven't sunk to the level of Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the governor of Arkansas, because there's a new application since she became governor about serving on state boards and commissions in Arkansas. And included in there is a question that basically insists you say something nice about the governor. It includes this question: what is an accomplishment of the governor's that you admire the most? Keep in mind, she's only been in office for, 3 months now? But according to the Arkansas Times, that question is now on there. So if you want to work on a board or a commission, you have to answer this question, which already takes up more space than one of the other questions. What book have you read that would best define your life and why? And somewhere and somehow or another, they found room for the question, what is an accomplishment of the governor's that you admire most? I hope that the Arkansas Times stays on this, because you'll be able to get these through a, you know, Freedom of Information Act request, I'm certain. And when they're able to, oh my goodness, the answers that you're going to get from certain sycophants is going to be, I mean, it's just going to be good entertainment. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. All right. We are going to talk in the next half hour to Joe Zepecki, and we covered a few things in the conversation that we did yesterday. We start, of course, with Tammy Baldwin announcing that she's running for a third term. And we look at the possible folks who might challenge Tammy Baldwin. But we also look at some of those same Republicans. And we get into the continuing cluelessness, the inability of the Republicans to read the room and to ask themselves candidly, might we be the reason why Republicans are losing the youth vote and losing elections? So we'll cover that and much more with our friend Joe Zepecki next. You're up north.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Here's Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to Up North News Radio. On a Thursday morning, we're here now with Joe Zepecki, as we are many Thursdays, to talk about some of the headlines around Wisconsin during the week and, you know, what it means for those of us who look at politics and want these folks to actually be working on our behalf instead of, you know, parties and donors and things like that. And thankfully, we have Joe's perspective on all that. How are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you. We're going to start with the obvious. Tammy Baldwin announced on Wednesday morning that she is running for a third term. It was not unexpected, but it's always nice to not leave moments open for drama or speculation or anything like that. So while it was expected, this is still good news for, you know, Wisconsin Democrats and progressives.
Yeah, this makes it official. You know, Senator Baldwin has had two pretty comfortable wins in 2012 and 2018. As she noted in her announcement, though, she's not taken anything for granted. Wisconsin remains a 50-50 state. You know, we can't rest on our laurels after the recent Supreme Court victory. This is going to be a tough race and a tight race. Now, with that said, I do think one of the more interesting storylines to watch now that Senator Baldwin has made it official, who's going to take her on? The Republicans have not been chomping at the bit. They know that Tammy Baldwin is a formidable politician. She does her politics back home. She focuses on issues like Make It in America and healthcare and climate change and climate jobs that the people of Wisconsin react to. And so I think that's the big question now, is who's going to take her on? When you look at who the sort of leading lights in the Republican Party are right now, I would point you to Langlade County, which had their Lincoln Day dinner last weekend. And the headliners were former Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark, former special counsel Michael Gableman, Congressman Tom Tiffany. I mean, these are ultra, ultra MAGA Republicans doing the chicken dinner circuit, which is often a precursor to a statewide campaign. And so I think the big question is whether there will be a sort of mainstream Republican willing to take Senator Baldwin on, or if Republicans will be saddled with another candidate in the mold of Donald Trump or frankly, Daniel Kelly.
Okay, I'm going to be a little contrarian here. Wisconsin is so used to close races. We always talk about being purple, being 50-50. But, you know, sometimes there are just some incumbents that are so strong that, you know, the challenger who ultimately comes, you know, up on the ballot is not somebody that you would expect, because, frankly, the rest of the party says, you know, our resources got to go toward, you know, winning the presidential election or whatever the case may be. And so I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that somebody as far right and colorful as, you know, former Sheriff Clark would be the one to emerge. And I, you know, people would turn to, again, kind of your mainstream Republican leaders and say, we don't want this. And they're going to say, well, you know, who wants to take on a popular senator?
The other dynamic at play here is that 2024 nationally is a very difficult year for Senate Democrats. And so when you look at, if you're a Republican and you're looking at where are your opportunities to flip seats, there are a lot of states that Republicans are going to choose to invest in before they get to Wisconsin. We're talking about Montana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Arizona, which may have a three-way race coming up now that Kyrsten Sinema is an independent and there is a Democratic candidate in the race. So now you're talking fifth, sixth, seventh on the list of priorities. And if you are one of those, what I would call a remaining sensible or mainstream Republican, you look at that battleground map and you go, are the resources going to be there to take on someone like Tammy Baldwin, who we know is formidable? And so, that's for all those reasons and many more, I think, you know, and among those reasons are the ongoing, what I would call, you know, internal fight, if not outright civil war within the Republican Party about what direction they're going to go. That's the big question, is who is going to step up and take her on? And the best thing that supporters of Senator Baldwin can do is chip in a few bucks to her campaign early, set, you know, make it clear she's going to have the resources to continue to do the great work on everything from civil rights to union rights to building a brighter future for all of us. She's been a very, very accomplished and successful senator.
You know, related to this is your friendly reminder that last November, Tony Evers won, and so did Ron Johnson. And while we all can shake our heads about that, the presidential contest could be completely different. And it is kind of a reminder to Wisconsin Democrats to take nothing for granted next year. Next year could be Tammy Baldwin wins Wisconsin and some Republican nominee does if Joe Biden doesn't run a strong campaign. It is completely within the realm of possibility.
It absolutely is. You don't see it a lot, but in a state like this, anything can happen.
In a state like this, we saw turnout, I don't know how to describe the young adult vote turnout. Certainly national press has taken a look at it this week. And it is, when I come up with words like bonkers or insane, that's you know, flat out hyperbole, and I apologize for it. But let's just call it more reassuring or soul affirming or whatever it is, that younger voters are not walking away from politics just as they get into adulthood, but are saying, hey, we're next.
Yeah. My word is stratospheric.
Nice.
The kids are all right. They know what's at stake. And among the challenges for Republicans is there is a new generation of voters who are coming of age, and they are a large generation, just as Republicans are sort of hopefully at the depth of their extremism. In the post, but maybe still kind of Donald Trump era, certainly an era in our politics that will be defined by Trumpism for generations to come. And it's not just one race, right? It's not just that the kids came out for this court race to help help take down Daniel Kelly and elect Justice-elect Protasiewicz. It's they came out last fall and helped deliver a victory for Governor Evers. They almost got Mandela Barnes over the top. They see what is at stake and they are voting like it. And any social scientist, any political scientist, anybody who looks at the data will tell you that voting is a habit. And the sooner you form that habit, the harder it is to break. So we now have young people in this state who voted in November, and then in February, and then in April, and they have seen the power of their vote, that they can make a big difference. And guess what, folks? Those kids are going to be voting for the next 50 years. That can really change the dynamic, particularly in a very closely divided state.
Especially when you have Republicans who either are moving to extremes or, in our next couple of examples, cannot read the room. Both Scott Walker's comments after Daniel Kelly's loss and now Congressman Mike Gallagher's comments as well. Again, kind of saying the quiet parts out loud, that if you can't win on the issues, then try to suppress the vote. Pick whichever one you want to go with first.
Well, let's take Mr. Walker first. You know, there's the old saying that to a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And to somebody tasked with running the Young Republicans organization, I think it's called YAF, that Scott Walker now runs, that's his day job. Of course, he's going to say that young people are a problem. Now, what he says is these poor young people who have no agency are being indoctrinated. I would like to see him say that to a young person who, you know, would have no compunction about saying, nobody indoctrinated me. I just don't want to get shot at school. I grew up practicing active shooter drills, and that's not okay. I would like to have agency over my own body and my own healthcare decisions. That's not indoctrination. Those are facts. And so for Mr. Walker, I think he's the hammer and he just views young voters as a nail. With Gallagher, it's frankly, I'm a little bit more surprised. And so this is what Congressman Gallagher had to say on a radio show, a lesser product than civic media yesterday.
Thank you.
He said the Democrats have obviously embraced early voting, absentee voting. That's not going away anytime soon. So we need to figure out a way to get our people to vote, whether they vote early, in person, vote absentee. And here's the key part: until such a moment as we actually have the ability to tighten election procedures, and we lost that opportunity because we lost the governor's race in the last election. And so you have to ask yourself, what does it mean to tighten election procedures? It sounds an awful lot like they don't like it that all these young people are voting. They don't like it that people are actually having their say in the democratic process. To your point, it's the quiet part out loud. You know, there is a emerging thought in this country that a lot of our systems are set up for what Republicans have exploited to ensure minority rule, with the way the Senate works, with the way the Electoral College works, the population of the several states. And so Mr. Gallagher appears to be veering towards that MAGA extreme wing of the Republican Party when it comes to wanting to tighten election procedures. I'll tell you right now, I don't think it's going to work, because what we've seen in this state, you know, about 10 years ago, we enacted voter ID, and there was a lot of outrage over that. And rather than sit on our hands about it, Democrats got smart. We organized around it. We made sure people had the information. And among the information they had was, somebody wants to make it harder for you to use your power. That actually causes a backlash and makes it more likely for people to go out and vote. I don't know what Mr. Gallagher was thinking, but we certainly have more insight into his thinking than we had 2 days ago.
Well, I certainly hope somebody from, you know, either Green Bay media, or when he makes an appearance, you know, in Milwaukee next on the Sunday shows or something, I really hope they tuck that away, and that's one of the very first questions is, exactly which procedures are you talking about tightening up here? Because we have seen in plenty of states, either new rules or proposed new rules that specifically target college age voters, mm-hmm. and try to either make it harder or at least sow confusion about whether they can vote in where they're going to college, or if they have to vote, you know, back quote unquote home, even if they may right. never live there again. It's that kind of monkey business that I agree with you is just going to backfire on them.
Yeah. They're not reading the room, as you say.
Yeah, exactly. Fox News says they are going to host the first Republican debate in Milwaukee, which, of course, makes sense since the Republican convention is coming there. I'm asking more for just to say it out loud rather than I'm not looking for direction. But I do wonder, they'll say all the right things at first. Thanks for Milwaukee for hosting us. Lots of air kisses, as I like to call it. But I just wonder how long it's going to take until they drop all this pretense and start bashing the very city that they're going to be in, because that they want to win the Midwest, and they're looking to win the rural white voters in the Midwest who believe them when they say Milwaukee is the big bad city. You had Tom Tiffany, you know, dissing New York City on national TV this week. I think they're just going to keep going at this rural urban divide. Or do you, being much closer to Milwaukee, do you think they're actually going to play nice the whole time about their host city?
Well, I don't expect them to play nice the whole time. I think they will wait until what they view as the maximally opportune time to exploit whatever is happening. That's politics. It ain't beanbag. And, you know, as Tom Tiffany sort of got called out, New York City is safer than a lot of red parts of America.
Yes.
And so, you know, that to me, one of the more important and positive developments has been that Democrats, people who live in big cities, have been unafraid to sort of take this these biases on and call and state what the facts are, which is cities are great places to live. Yes, there are challenges. There are challenges everywhere. And Democrats are interested in solving those challenges, as opposed to Republicans, who like to just use rhetoric instead of actual solutions. I would point to, and I may have pointed to this last week, but I think it really is a good embodiment of how serious Governor Evers and Democrats are about solving these problems. Signed bipartisan legislation to crack down on reckless driving in Milwaukee, make it easier for law enforcement to get those dangerous drivers and their vehicles off the streets. That's a common sense solution to a challenge, as opposed to grandstanding and just, you know, letting rhetoric pass as a solution.
Solutions. They still work, kids. Joseph Becky, whose insight and savvy are best described with a word he used today, stratospheric. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you later.
And we'll be back. You're up north.
When you're away from your radio, you're never far away from the show. Catch our live stream at our Facebook page. Search for Up North News WI. We'll be right back.
Do it, Kristen.
I'm so in love with you.
I always love proving that we are so out of sync with the technology going back here.
It sure is proving.
But it feels so good.
Poor Al Green is over there. I'm trying to sing his heart out, and we can't sync up, you know? Whatever you want to do. Al Green is 77 years old today, cranking out one of the all-time great songs.
My favorite is when President Obama sang that.
Oh, I know.
That's one of my favorite moments.
Mm-hmm. More birthdays today. Peebo Bryson is 72, who gave us If Ever You're In My Arms Again, lovely, and a couple of duets as well. Max Weinberg, 72 years old, from the E Street Band, and what's his face? It's Conan O'Brien's late night show for the longest time there. Lou Bega is 48. You don't know the name Lou Bega? You will when you hear this hit.
One, two, three, four, five. Everybody in the car. So
that
come
guy.
On, let's ride to the liquor store.
The guy who gave us Mambo number 5. From 1999.
I feel like that came out right around the time that like things were controversial with Bill Clinton and
yep,
a little bit of Monica in my life.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yeah. Sometimes a song just, you know, hits the sweet spot, you know, as far as when it drops with the lyrics that mm-hmm. are in there, you know. Mm-hmm. Let's see. There are just some signature movie themes and instrumentals that managed to get to the charts, and that includes this one from Bill Conti, who's 81 today. Dr. Lyerly empties 4X into a glass and drinks them. And she runs up and down the steps of, what, City Hall or the courthouse there in Green Bay?
There's not a building in Green Bay that has steps. There's just not.
Can we find you a lighthouse or something? Well, I suppose that's why you got the bike.
Lambo!
There you go. Lambo running up and down the stairs. All right, while we have the theme from Rocky in the background, Thomas Jefferson, it's his anniversary of his birth, born on this day in 1743. The Jefferson Memorial was dedicated in D.C. on this day in 1943 to mark the 200th anniversary of his birthday. And on this day in 1976, the Treasury Department reintroduces the $2 bill on Thomas Jefferson's 233rd birthday as part of the bicentennial celebration. And everybody keeps hoarding them. There are no $2 bills. You can't find them anyplace. I never understood why they didn't stay in circulation. People thought they were unique and you know, saved them. But that doesn't do you any good when they're not in circulation.
When you go to Monticello and mm-hmm. you pay your entrance fee, they give you your change back in $2 bills.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, that's absolutely cute. And I like how you properly say Monticello because, you know, there's – in other cities around the country, including in Minnesota, of course, they call it Monticello. And it reminds me of another city in Minnesota you go to. You know, when you think about the city in South America, you think of Montevideo. And of course, in the Midwest, in Minnesota, you get Montevideo.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, in Wisconsin, we've got Berlin and Berlin.
Yep, yep.
Like, how do you actually say it?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It makes me cringe every time.
Does it?
Just go with it.
We often talk about records that were released on this day. This one wasn't a record. It was released as a live performance on this day in 1742, 1 year before Thomas Jefferson was born, a fellow by the name of George Frederick Handel. And of course, we know it as Handel's Messiah. It took a while for me to find, you know, that's the part everybody knows. And I'm looking at, you know, various performances of it. That hits at 1 hour, 54 minutes and 55 seconds into it. So you got to be really good on the fast forward button if you want to find that thing. It premiered at the Fishamble Street in Dublin, part of a charity series of concerts that the composer had been invited to give by their local Lord Lieutenant. So it was just a charity concert thing. He just thought he'd whip out a little something for that, and he created an instant classic. So good on him.
And you had to build to it. You can't just like come out with a hallelujah right at the very beginning. You have to like work up to it.
No, seriously, most of us think that that's exactly how it begins and don't realize it is. It's a very long piece, and that is part of it. Also released on this day in 1987, the Fleetwood Mac album Tango in the Night, with singles that included Big Love, Little Lies, and Seven Wonders. And one more musical clip for you, a song that hit number one on this day in 1974. Again, if you can't get that in one note when playing Name That Tune, then I don't think I want to know you. You hear that first little accidental, you know, hit of the keyboard, and you go, that's Benny and the Jets by Elton John. Number one, this day in 1974. We were talking about Tiger Woods earlier this week and just how rough it was to see him, you know, aging and his knees and his feet and everything else. And it's a melancholy reminder that it was on this day in 1997 that Tiger Woods became the youngest golfer ever to win the Masters. And I remember that, you remember that, I'm sure, that who is this new thing on the scene? My wife will forever be thankful to Tiger Woods, because in her mind, he's the reason that golfers look fashionable, or at least look presentable. Whereas prior to Tiger, it was a bunch of loud plaids and, you know, just garish colors and everything else. And, you know, Tiger was kind of brought GQ style to the golf course.
He did. And I don't mean to remind you about this, Pat, but that was like 25 years ago. I know it seems like yesterday.
It does. It does. It really sometimes does, you know? How can it be 25 years? It just seems.
I know.
We're 26 now. My goodness. One more note. We mentioned Billie Eilish last week sometime, but it was on this day in 2019 that she hit number one with her debut album, When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go? And that made her the first artist born in the 21st century to top the charts, because she was 17 at the time. So the first one born in the aughts to have a number one hit. So good on her.
Yeah, she's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And boy, the kids love her.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would, too, if I spent more time listening to something besides, you know, Sinatra Live at the Sands and, you know, trying to sing along to Al Green. And yeah, you name it. You got about 10 seconds to preview Hometown Health for us.
We're going to talk to my friend, Dr. Tracy Gayu, about pediatric mental health.
A very serious crisis that needs serious solutions and isn't exactly getting serious attention from some folks under the big dome in Madison. So we will talk more of that at the bottom of the next hour. We'll take a break for news here and be back with more headlines talk in just a bit on Up North News Radio for this Thursday.